relatively clean for how close the fire was. All the birds are doing great.
Protecting these critically endangered birds is always hard. But in this instance, Jennifer's work was truly heroic.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
So firstly, it's important to tell the stories of the victims, of people who have been exposed to horrific abuse in Israel's prison system. Additionally, this publication is meant to change the reality.
The Israeli human rights group B'Tselem is accusing the Israeli government of running a network of torture camps for Palestinian prisoners. This comes as Israeli TV airs shocking video of Israeli soldiers sexually abusing a Palestinian prisoner at an army base that's been compared to Guantanamo. We'll get the latest. Then to Sudan.
Given the massive hunger crisis unfolding in North Darfur and other parts of the country, we need to reach people now across borders, across battle lines, by air, by land.
After 15 months of civil war in Sudan, the UN is warning over a dozen more areas of Sudan are at risk of famine. But first to Britain, where massive rallies against racism and Islamophobia are taking place across the country in response to a string of violent far-right riots. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The World Health Organization's announced plans to send 1.2 million polio vaccine doses to Gaza amidst fears of a polio outbreak after the virus was detected in wastewater. Over the past 10 months, Israel's destroyed all of Gaza's wastewater treatment plants and most of Gaza's sewage pumps. The WHO says it's aiming to vaccinate 600,000 Palestinian children under the age of 8. The WHO repeated its call for a ceasefire, saying its medical staff need absolute freedom of movement to administer the vaccines. This all comes as Israel's killed at least 27 more Palestinians in central and southern Gaza in what Al Jazeera called a, quote, especially bloody day. The dead included Nadi Salot, who worked with the humanitarian group World Central Kitchen. In April, a series of Israeli airstrikes killed seven other workers at World Central Kitchen. One Israeli airstrike killed and wounded several displaced Palestinians in Deir al-Bala.
The missile fell and the explosion was huge. In front of me, there was about 15 to 20 wounded people. The majority of them had their legs dismembered, their legs amputated. After that hit, I went with my neighbor whose leg was dismembered. I went with him in the ambulance to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. When we were at Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, they hit the second strike. We came this morning, as you can see, to this destruction. We did not expect the strike to be this powerful and in this magnitude. The scene makes you want to cry. Children were fleeing. It was like the end of the world. The pictures speak louder than words.
In more news on Gaza, Turkey's formally asked to join South Africa's genocide lawsuit against Israel at the International Court of Justice. In election news in the United States, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz held rallies in Michigan and Wisconsin Wednesday, as Republican VP candidate J.D. Vance also attended competing events in both states. This is Governor Walz speaking at the Democratic campaign rally in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
In Minnesota, just like in Wisconsin, we respect our neighbors and the personal choices they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choices for ourselves, because we know there's a golden rule. Mind your own damn business. Mind your own damn business. I don't need you telling me about our health care. I don't need you telling us who we love. And I sure the hell don't need you telling us what books we're going to read.
At a separate rally Wednesday in Detroit, Michigan, Palestinian rights activists disrupted a speech by Vice President Harris.
And he intends to end the Affordable Care Act. You know what? If you want Donald Trump to win, Then say that, otherwise I'm speaking.
The protesters were chanting, "Kamala, Kamala, you can't hide. We won't vote for genocide." Ahead of the rally, leaders of the Uncommitted National Movement met Harris briefly and requested a meeting to discuss demands for an arms embargo against Israel. Harris is speaking at a United Auto Workers event today in Detroit. Utah's enacted a ban on 13 books, 12 of them written by women, ordering their removal from public schools and libraries. PEN America says Utah's move is the first statewide book ban. It includes the books Forever by Judy Blume, Oryx and Crake by Margaret Atwood, Milk and Honey by Ruth B. Kaur, and six books by Sarah J. Maas, a popular young adult author. In Bangladesh, Nobel laureate Muhammad Yunus has returned home after being recruited to lead an interim government following the ouster of the longtime Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina in a student-led uprising. Yunus spoke briefly after landing in Dhaka and addressed reports of attacks against minority Hindu, Buddhist, and Christian groups.
Our first order of business should be to restore law and order. Until that is taken care of, we will not be able to proceed to further improve the situation. You have shown faith in me, and the students here have reassured me to carry out that duty. I request the residents of Bangladesh to believe in me. If you do that, there will not be attacks at any locations in the country.
Muhammad Yunus also vowed to follow the lead of the student movement, saying, quote, "Whatever path our students show us, we will move ahead with that." To see Democracy Now!'s interviews with Muhammad Yunus over the years, you can go to democracynow.org. Police in Spain are searching for the Catalan separatist leader, Carles Puigdemont, after he returned to Barcelona, ending 7 years in exile despite a pending warrant for his arrest. Puigdemont spoke at a rally in Barcelona earlier today.
Over the years, they persecuted us for listening to the voice of the people of Catalonia. Years where there was a harsh repression from prison to exile that affected the lives of thousands of people for being pro-independence, sometimes for the mere fact of speaking Catalan, making being Catalan something suspicious.
Catalan separatist leader Carles Puigdemont disappeared just after he spoke in Barcelona, prompting a massive police search. Roadblocks have been set up and the police are searching cars in the area in a massive manhunt. Major anti-fascist rallies took place across the United Kingdom Wednesday as communities came together to counter the recent surge in far-right violence. Members of Muslim and immigrant communities in Britain say the riots have left them feeling unsafe.
Newcastle is known for love. People are very lovely all the time. We never had this sort of issue. So that's why we all are here, to show our solidarity with each other. Yes, I was scared, but when I saw these guys, everybody here, I'm really happy, and I will, and not only me, entire community.
The riots erupted after misinformation spread about a suspect in a recent stabbing spree that killed three little girls. British police have arrested some 400 white nationalists and warned rioters could face terrorism charges and 10 years in prison. We'll go to London later in the broadcast. Russia's declared a state of emergency in Kursk and accused Kyiv of a major provocation amidst an ongoing Ukrainian incursion in the southwestern border region, which has killed at least 5 people and injured 30 others since Tuesday. The White House says it was not aware of the ground attack beforehand and would seek more information from Ukraine. In other news from Russia, Pavel Khoshny, a pianist who was jailed for making videos condemning the war on Ukraine, has died while in pretrial detention. Meanwhile, Russian human rights advocate Oleg Orlov, who was recently freed in an historic prisoner swap, says he's spoken with other released dissidents about possible future prisoner exchanges. Orlov, leader of the Nobel Peace Prize-winning group Memorial, gave interviews Wednesday from Berlin, where he's living in exile.
Only super repressive laws and jailing. And these are demonstrative jailings that are showing society, this is what will happen to you. Have a look. That's the only thing that disrupted the wave of the anti-war movement. And still, I'm sure if the repressive component was reduced just a little, just a tiny bit, we'll see how much the public actually supports Putin. We will see the reality, not the illusion that is being created now.
Back in the United States, an Arizona Republican involved in the 2020 fake elector scheme pleaded guilty and became the first person to be convicted in the state's wide-ranging case. Lorraine Pellegrino, who signed a document falsely claiming Donald Trump had won Arizona in 2020, was sentenced to unsupervised probation. Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows have also been charged in Arizona's fake elector case. Court papers released this week show the Arizona grand jury that indicted 18 Trump allies in the case also wanted to indict Trump, but were advised against the move by state prosecutors. In New York, Republican lawmakers in Nassau County approved a bill that would make wearing a mask or any face covering in public a misdemeanor. The measure contains exceptions for health and religious reasons that the New York Civil Liberties Union calls wholly inadequate. The NYCLU said in a statement, quote, criminalizing masks forces those with disabilities or medical conditions, as well as their families and loved ones, to have to decide whether to segregate themselves from public life or endanger their health and even lives, unquote. This comes as at least 84 countries have reported a summer COVID surge. In France, dozens of athletes at the Paris Olympics have tested positive for COVID. California is also experiencing a surge, the worst in 2 years. Torrential rains and flash floods have killed at least 40 people in western Yemen and displaced hundreds more from their homes. In Australia, new research confirms water temperatures in and around the Great Barrier Reef have reached their warmest in 400 years over the past decade, placing the world's largest coral reef under even greater danger. This is Benjamin Henley, one of the study's co-authors.
This is such a massive challenge that every single person on Earth needs to contribute to it. And I mean individuals all the way up to the world's governments at our UN scale meetings. The urgency would not be higher right now.
In Arizona, the Hualapai Nation is suing the Bureau of Land Management, BLM, over its approval of a lithium exploration project. The lawsuit accuses the federal agency of failing to properly evaluate the project's impacts on local water wells and springs. And in the UK, police arrested 22 people over a planned climate camp near the Drax power station in North Yorkshire. It's the latest example of UK authorities intensifying criminalization of climate activism, including before any actions even take place. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Massive rallies against racism and Islamophobia filled the streets of cities across the United Kingdom Wednesday as communities united to counter a recent surge in far-right violence. In recent days, British police have arrested 400 far-right rioters for carrying out a string of attacks in England and Northern Ireland, targeting Muslims and migrants. On Wednesday, thousands gathered in London to speak out against the far-right.
Say it loud! Say it good!
Off with small groups on the streets attacking immigrants, or in those days Jews. Now the same types of people are on the streets in this country. It's absolutely disgraceful, and I'm standing here against that, and with the community here to show that, you know, we're totally opposed to fascism then, and we're totally opposed to fascism now.
We truly, as you can see today, we really, truly, truly do come together. We did it before, we'll do it again, and I'm just worried about the places where this is not happening, where the people aren't coming out to stop them. I'm really, truly worried about those other communities, and feeling really worried about everybody, really worried about people's safety, my friends' children's safety. I've got a lot of people of colour in my network, worried about the Muslim people, the people of all faiths that are suffering. Just don't need them, we don't want them. It's time to move on from this. I can't believe it's happening again. I was around in Thatcher years. I can't believe you used to get up in the anti-Nazi marches, and here we are again.
Voices from a major anti-fascist protest in London Wednesday in response to far-right violence targeting Muslim and immigrant communities. Over the weekend, rioters raided and set fire to hotels used to shelter asylum seekers in northern England. The right-wing violence erupted after misinformation spread about a suspect in a recent stabbing that killed three little girls. On Sunday, Prime Minister Keir Starmer condemned what he called far-right thuggery.
People in this country have a right to be safe, and yet we've seen Muslim communities targeted, attacks on mosques, other minority communities singled out, Nazi salutes in the street, attacks on the police, wanton violence alongside racist rhetoric. So no, I won't shy away from calling it what it is, far-right thuggery.
We're joined now in London by Faiza Shaheen, visiting professor of practice at London School of Economics. She joined us in June after she was blocked from running for parliament in Britain's general election after the Labour Party suspended her over social media activity and liking several posts. Welcome back to Democracy Now, Faiza. Thanks for joining us. Explain what is happening. Begin at the beginning. The reason the far right is rioting across the country, and then this massive response in Britain by anti-fascist organizers and just the people of Britain.
Yeah, I mean, this phase, I would say, of far right activity in this country was sparked just a week ago when there was this horrific murders, stabbing of three or more children at a dance class in Southport, which is in the north of England, and three little girls were killed, and it was horrific, and that community was, of course, you know, in bits. And misinformation spread online that it was a Muslim youth that had committed this crime. And immediately what happened was the far right came out, and more than that online, you know, not just the thugs and the terrorists on the streets, but online, immediately a whole bunch of pundits, politicians on the right started, you know, saying that this, you know, this is because of immigration, and this is because Muslims are taking over, and this is, you know, all of that sort of language that people will be used to hearing, unfortunately, in different parts of the world, in the US. And then we had a pushback saying, oh, this person isn't Muslim. And so, you know, we had the BBC, for instance, reporting this isn't a Muslim, but it was interesting even how that was said, as if they were a Muslim, then it would be okay to do what they were doing, which is going, attacking mosques, and that's where it first started. And then just an emboldened, organized far right on the streets around the country, stopping cars, pulling people out of cars, beating them up, pulling hijabs off women, going to areas where they know there's a lot of immigrants and Muslims, and smashing cars, smashing homes. I mean, just a whole spate of terror, and caused so much anxiety and fear amongst the community. You know, there's been a few reactions off the back of that in the last week. So we've had the government reaction, which has been more focused on law and order. Of course, these people need to be arrested. It's taken them a while to get to the point to be able to call it racism and Islamophobia. Actually, quite a lot of pressure has been put on for it to be called that. Secondly, was the media reaction, which has been really upsetting. I mean, we've heard on the BBC them call these rioters, they've called it pro-British marches, which is just so upsetting. They've done a sort of both siding, you know, that they're there causing trouble, but also there's these Muslim men outside the mosque, as if them trying to protect the mosque is the same as these people coming and terrorizing that mosque. That has upset a lot of people. And then thirdly, it's the people coming out on the street, as we saw last night, and these rallies around the country. So yes, we expected them to be really big in London, but they were also big in Bristol and other parts of the country as well. People just saying that we don't want this violence on our street. We reject this ideology. And that, you know, I think as a Muslim myself, and as someone that has received so many messages from people that have felt very, very anxious, you know, it was heartening to see that. But we've got to understand that actually this didn't just start last week, that this is the outcome of almost decades now of drip feeding poison into the ears of the public, not just the Conservatives, but Labour as well, and other politicians, Nigel Farage's, the kind of the far right politically, talking about immigration in a really negative way, Muslims as if they are a problem, legitimating these sorts of concerns that that the far right say about Muslims taking over, etc. And unfortunately, we're still hearing that quite a lot. So, you know, this problem is about social media. It is about arresting people, but it's much, much deeper than that. And it is about the politics of the far right and anti-immigration, which is really deep-seated in this country.
Faiza, this week, Labour MP Zara Sultana was interviewed on Good Morning Britain about the far-right riots and tried to raise the issue of Islamophobia. This is how it went.
Why is it important to you to use that specific word, Islamophobic? It's been called racist, it's been called thuggery. I think that's important because we are speaking to the Home Secretary and other politicians this morning. Why does that matter to you to use the word Islamophobic?
In Stockport, a mosque was targeted, bricks were thrown out. The people who were in the mosque at that time, who were basically locked down in that mosque, said that they feared for their life. They weren't able to get out. I'm just finishing the question.
Faiza, if you can take it from there.
Yeah, I saw that. And what happened was really she was blocked from talking. She was interrupted. She was laughed at. It was like on live bullying on TV. And she's an MP, elected twice now, and was made to feel and look like she was talking rubbish, you know, when she was talking about Islamophobia and talking about these very real experiences. And there was a huge reaction to that. They had a huge number of complaints made about that show because it was bullying and it was dismissive. And that sort of implicit or even explicit Islamophobia is just so prevalent. You know, I did a radio show yesterday where I was talking about Islamophobia and was immediately told that, oh, well, it's because the far right are emboldened because of pro-Palestine marches and being asked to talk about anti-Semitism. You know, there's not really much space to be able to really look at this problem for what it is. And this is why we have a real challenge now going forward. Yes, it's amazing to see people out in the street. But that's really just the first step. You know, we don't have... I lived in New York for a little while, and it was really noticeable to me how much more organized anti-racist movement is there than here. We haven't pushed back enough on the media. We do have a government that is already saying, you know, that they might have a point and we need to strike a balance, you know, which is outrageous. So this is a longer term fight. Otherwise, these far right issues are going to keep happening. And we really do need to organize in our communities and from the grassroots up.
I want to thank you very much for being with us, Faiza Shaheen, visiting professor of practice at the London School of Economics, speaking to us from London. Coming up, the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem is accusing the Israeli government of running a network of torture camps for Palestinian prisoners. Stay with us.
Be it your brother, be it your cousin, or your aunt.
racist friend by the specials. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's facing growing condemnation over the torture and rape of Palestinian prisoners. Israel's Channel 12 News aired shocking footage of Israeli soldiers sexually abusing a Palestinian prisoner. The video shows a group of blindfolded prisoners lying on the ground inside a prison at Sde Teman Army Base, which critics have compared to Guantanamo. Israeli guards are then seen taking one man into a corner where the soldiers encircled him and reportedly sexually assaulted him. Israel's investigation of this incident is what led a group of far-right Israeli protesters and lawmakers to break into two military bases last week in an effort to prevent the soldiers from being questioned. Meanwhile, a group of UN experts has warned Israel's escalating use of torture of jailed Palestinians is a crime against humanity. The experts wrote, "Torture practices are irredeemably unlawful and constitute international crimes, yet form part of the modus operandi of Israel's notorious detention and torture system," unquote. Meanwhile, the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem has published a major new report documenting how the Israeli prison system has become what B'Tselem calls a network of torture camps. I want to turn to an interview conducted by B'Tselem of Ashraf al-Mutasab, a father of five from Hebron and a wedding band manager. While detained on the morning of November 18th last year, Ashraf had prison guards storm his cell he shared with other men, claiming they were looking for a radio.
One morning at 6, they raided our cell, about 15 guards with a monstrous dog. Sometimes they made him attack sensitive body parts. They attacked us all, kicking us and hitting us with sticks. I was leaning against the wall behind others in the cell. They started kicking me in the neck and ear. Unfortunately, I got a very hard blow to my ear. I've completely lost my hearing on that side. I got four fractures in my back ribs, three in my chest, and fractures in my hands and other body parts.
In another interview conducted by the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem, 50-year-old Firas Hassan, an official in the Palestinian Authority's Ministry of Youth and Sports, describes not only being beaten by prison guards while in detention, but hearing that their brutal attack is being live-streamed for Itamar Ben-Gvir, the Minister of National Security of Israel, to watch.
On November 9th, 2023, two prison forces, the District Unit and the Initial Response Force, came into cell 14 we were in on Wing 28. We were 10 Palestinians in the cell. The forces came in masked and beat us for 50 minutes. They laughed while they hit us and live streamed it all. I understand Hebrew, and I heard one say, "We're live streaming for Ben-Gvir," directly to Ben-Gvir. They beat us in various ways with their hands and feet, and then brought in police dogs. After they tied our hands behind our backs and blindfolded us.
B'Tselem also spoke to Sari Haria. He's a 53-year-old real estate lawyer and an Israeli citizen. He was arrested and detained over a Facebook post November 4th last year. In this clip, Sari describes Abdurrahman Mari, a 23-year-old man in the isolation cell next to him, screaming in pain and later being brought out in a body bag.
He screamed in pain constantly, begging for the doctor. The guard would come now and then and swear at him and tell him to shut up. In the morning, the guards came to count us. One said, "Get up, you animal. Get up, you dog." They checked him, and the whole place went silent.